Wednesday, May 17, 2017. You are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, sports writer from Denver, Colorado. You know, we talk sports every single Wednesday. We do it a little bit different than any other sports shows do it. You know, we don't really do the arguments. We don't really do the hot takes. It's not really how we approach things here at the Daily Dose. We just look at some of the top stories, and we try to apply some actual common sense. And we kind of just make fun of everyone in the world of sports. We might also look back at some sports history every now and then. Hopefully, we can also make you laugh once or twice a week. If you would like to recommend the podcast, and we would appreciate that so much, please let your friends, your family, your coworkers know they can subscribe to the podcast pretty much anywhere that podcasts are hosted. iTunes, Stitcher, Podcast Republic, Google Play. You can go over to Audio Boom. They've got it there. BlogTalkRadio.com has every single episode that we have ever done. And let's say you would like to share the podcast, but you don't actually feel like talking to someone and telling them about it. I totally get it. I completely sympathize and I completely understand. Just click that little share button wherever it is that you listen, and you can send your friend or whoever it is a link to the show. It goes to them via email or text. Sometimes that's just easier than actually having to have a conversation with somebody, especially people you work with. You don't always feel like doing that. Plus, if it is someone that is a little bit technically challenged, you can just make it easier for them. Maybe they don't get the whole podcasting thing. It's all a bunch of newfangled stuff. They don't understand it. Just click that little share button. You can send it right over to them. Or you can also head to our website, dailydosesports.wordpress.com. You will see a new article go up every single week over there. And we do also put a link to the podcast this week. Talked a little about the new Madden NFL cover that is going out on the new Madden 18 video game that will be coming out. Have to talk about that a little bit later in the show. Also, make sure that you stop by our podcast network, RogueIntel.com. Of course, the Daily Dose is a proud member of the Rogue Intel Podcast Network, and they've got a number of other podcasts that are over there at Rogue that you're going to like, you're going to want to check out. They've got a few new podcasts, in fact, just recently that have come up. You're going to want to go check those out. Go over to RogueIntel.com. You'll find a few new podcasts to listen to every single week. If you've got a question, maybe you've got a comment, you might need some advice. Who knows? You may need some help with something. You can hit us up about any subject. You can find us on email at dailydosesports@gmail.com. That is D-A-L-Y, dailydosesports@gmail.com. You can also find us over on Twitter or Facebook. And you know, if you follow us on Twitter or Facebook, you'll also get updates. You'll get links to articles. You'll get links to the podcast, all that good stuff. So make sure that you do that as well. Today on the show, we will be previewing those NBA conference finals. Of course, they are already underway. We want to give you our take on how we think that is going to go. You know, I'm going to tell you what I think might have happened to Houston Rockets guard James Harden in the NBA Conference semifinals. We saw him kind of melt down in Game 6 against the San Antonio Spurs. I think there was a specific reason that happened. And we will talk some top NFL stories. And of course, like we do every single week, you've got to make sure that you stick around for the Daily Dose Top 5. You never know which direction the Daily Dose Top 5 is going to go, but you always got to make sure that you tune in for that. Not sure if you saw this in college football, but University of Florida football coach Jim McElwain, it doesn't seem like he has much of a personality. I'm going to be honest. You know, someone posted a picture of this fat, naked man on, I think it was on Twitter, and the guy appears to be, how can I say this delicately? He appears to be kind of mounting a shark, like he's laying on top of this shark. And the guy, if you see the picture, he does kind of have a little bit of a resemblance to the Gators head coach. But when the media asked McElwain if it was him, I'm going to be honest, and you can hear the clip right here, dude did not appreciate it.
You've become part of this big viral photo.
Sure.
I mean, what's your feeling on this situation?
Well, first and foremost, I don't know who it is, but it isn't me.
I mean, what's your just feeling in general, just that something like this could even get out there and become a story?
Well, I guess that's for you guys to answer. And, you know, in the world we live, what is a story? I just know this. It isn't me.
Now, look, I understand that he doesn't want his name associated with hunting or humping sharks or whatever the idiot in the picture was doing. But I'm going to be honest, I'm starting to get a little bit concerned about Florida coach Jim McElwain. Okay, I'm going to name the college football coaches in the state of Florida, and you tell me which ones McElwain is better than, okay? Little game we'll play here. You pick which one's better. Florida State head coach Jimbo Fisher. No, I'm not sure he's better than him. How about Miami coach Mark Richt? again? Probably not. Mark Richt has won some things. South Florida has Charlie Strong. Yeah, I'm not sure about that. I'm going to be honest. I don't know if McElwain's better than Strong. Okay, how about Florida Atlantic coach Lane Kiffin? Possibly. Maybe. But Lane Kiffin is a very good offensive coach. Probably a pretty decent recruiter. Yeah, again, I'm not sure. How about Florida International head coach Butch Davis? Not sure if he's a great coach, but he's a really, really good recruiter. Not sure. Central Florida has Scott Frost. Remember former Nebraska Cornhusker Scott Frost? Seems like he's got a pretty good offensive mind. He's done some good things. Again, I'm not sure. Those are all the coaches in the state of Florida right now. There are some serious college football coaches in the state of Florida. And aside from like tooth size and sickly SEC East titles, I'm going to be honest, I'm not sure McElwain beats any of those guys out in much of anything. So he could at least have a sense of humor when he's presented with this whole shark humping picture or whatever it was. I mean, say something, you know, come on, man, I'm not that fat. You really think that's me? Or like my wife would be furious if she saw me making out with a shark like that. No, McElwain doesn't do anything. Can you have some sort of personality, dude? Like, you're trying to recruit to the University of Florida. You're at the big dog institution in Florida. You don't really have the big dog personality that we need to. Shift over to the NFL. Of course, Colin Kaepernick is getting quite a bit of news lately. We don't really talk a whole lot about Colin Kaepernick. We have brushed across Colin Kaepernick here or there, but I have a hard time spending too much time discussing a second or third string quarterback. And of course, the hot take right now is that Colin Kaepernick is being blackballed for his political stances, and also maybe it's just possibly a racial bias, I don't know. Okay, here's the thing, folks. We try to make professional sports into this magical situation full of like fairy dust and leprechauns. Here's the fact. And again, we're going to approach this with a little more common sense. The fact is, pro sports are just like any other job. I know we kind of think it's some different realm that these guys all live in. They don't. It's just like any other job. So let's remove the pro sports aspect from the equation, okay? Let me lay it out for you this way. Colin Kaepernick is just Colin from sales, and let's say he works at like a local cable company, all right? Now that cable company, they have monthly team building meetings. Like, they're voluntary. You don't really have to go, but they're encouraged that you should be there, right? It's his right not to go. You don't have to go, but again, the managers are kind of looking, and yes, you might not even like the sales meetings. Maybe you don't agree with the sales meetings, but everybody comes and everybody does it, and you're encouraged to go. You don't have to go, but you probably should go. You know what I'm saying? It's not that they're technically mandatory, but the company would love for you to be there, okay? You with me? Now, Colin in sales, and this is key. This is key. Colin in sales, he's not a very good salesman. Out of the 32 salespeople at the cable company, he was ranked 24th in sales per attempt. I don't know if that's a real sales statistic. I'm not a sales guy. I don't think that's a real sales statistic, but you know what I mean. He was ranked 24th in sales per attempt, if you know what I mean. He was ranked 23rd in overall salesman rating. Now, you can discuss why those other salespeople ranked below Colin still have jobs. I understand that. I get that. But they do show up for the voluntary sales meetings every month. Do you see what I'm saying here? So they might not be much better. Some of the people below him, they might not be much better than him. But they do show up at the sales meetings every month. And Colin seems to like he gets along with everyone at work. It's not that. It's not like he's getting into arguments or anything like that. It's not that. It's just that Colin, the salesperson, his production is not really that strong. And so when he doesn't do what the cable company wants all their salespeople to do, he's not that successful, and he kind of doesn't go along with the sort of voluntary things that you're supposed to do, the voluntary things that they're not required, but they're kind of encouraged to do. Yeah, it's hard for that company or any other company to want him because he's not that good at his job. Now, let's say for a second, let's say that Tom Brady from the cable company, him in sales, yeah, no, he can do whatever he wants. Like, he can probably shank someone and still have a job. That's not going to be an issue. Like Russell Wilson, you can overlook him not coming to those meetings, those sort of voluntary meetings. You can overlook that if his name's Russell Wilson, the sales guy, because he's good. But see, our friend Colin here, he's not that good. So a lot of companies don't want to hire him. Do you see that? If your problems exceed your talent, it's difficult to get a job.
What?
You probably see that kind of thing at your job every day. But for some reason, when it's pro sports, we look at it and we say, this is really confusing. Is this guy being blackballed? Call it whatever you want. But if you're going to bring in a bunch of questions and a bunch of media attention, and it's going to be a circus with you around, and you're not a very good player, I want you to think back. Because everybody's going to talk about, well, you know, Colin Kaepernick did take the San Francisco 49ers clear to the Super Bowl. You're right, he did. I'm trying to think of the last quarterback, maybe that won a playoff game, and they don't have a job now either. Oh, that's right, Tim Tebow. He doesn't have a job either. You know why? Because his circus was bigger than his talent. And as a result, he doesn't have a job in the NFL. It's not that difficult to figure that out. I know there's a lot of hot takes. I know there's a lot of people screaming and arguing about why Colin Kaepernick can't get a job. I actually expect some team maybe to give him a shot, especially once we see injuries and that kind of thing as we get further into the season. We may see a team bring him in. You could see like a Seattle. I could totally see like Pete Carroll bringing him in. The political climate in Seattle is left enough that they could bring Colin Kaepernick in and at least give him a shot. And the offense wouldn't be that foreign to his skill set. But understand why Kaepernick is having a very, very difficult time right now getting a look. Speaking of Tom Brady, like I said, Tom Brady could pretty much do whatever he wanted. If he's your sales guy, Tom Brady can like stab someone and he's still going to make the sale. Speaking of Tom Brady, it was announced last week that he will be appearing on the cover of the new EA Sports Madden video game. Now, at what point is hashtag Tommy just tempting fate? I want you to think about Tom Brady's life. You've got the supermodel wife. You have the Super Bowl rings. Well, you have the deflated footballs. And now you're going to be on the cover of Madden and just spit in the face of the Madden curse? Think about that. You've pushed fate in life pretty far as it is, without going and adventuring in and looking for things to go after like this. Look, I'm not like a superstitious person. And especially as a coach, I knew a lot of superstitious coaches had to wear the same tie, had to wear the same shirt, had to do the lucky this or the lucky routines, and they went through different things. I'm not that way. If I was going to be superstitious about something, like I want to wear the lucky shirt when I play the lottery. I don't want to waste it on like a game. That's silly to me. I'm just not a real superstitious person. But I'll be honest. When it comes to the Madden curse, no, I'm a little stitious. I might not be superstitious, but I'm a little stitious. Look back at the record. I'm going to give you a list of players who have been on the cover of Madden. Remember Garrison Hurst? Yeah, broken ankle. Remember Eddie George? Damage to his toe. What do you have, turf toe? I think he had turf toe. Dante Culpepper, injured back. Marshall Faulk, injured ankle. Michael Vick, prison sentence. However you want to term that. I don't know how you want to do that, but prison sentence for Michael Vick. Donovan McNabb, hernia. Sean Alexander, injured foot. Vince Young, I mean, he just sucked, so whatever you want to label that. Brett Favre, well, Brett Favre didn't like get hurt, but he did join the Jets, and that might be even more painful than any injury we could possibly put out there. Troy Polamalu hurt his knee. Peyton Hillis, remember Peyton Hillis, the last big white stiff running back? Peyton Hillis was on the cover of Madden. He actually missed a few games that season with strep throat. I'm not joking about that. He missed a few games with strep throat. Adrian Peterson. It wasn't so much bad for Adrian Peterson. It was more of a curse for his kid. Well, I don't know if we needed that, but it was more of a curse for his kid. Richard Sherman was on the cover of Madden. He ended up having to have Tommy John surgery after the season. And of course, last year, we saw Rob Gronkowski end his season early with a back injury. Hey, Tom Brady, eat all the avocado ice cream you want, but if you think you're playing until you're 50 and you're going to be on the cover of Madden, hey, you're crazy. I got news for you. Nobody rides for free. That's not how that's going to go down. Did you see? Talked about the Seattle Seahawks just a minute ago. Did you see that Eddie Lacy, their new running back, had his first weigh-in on Monday? We talked about how Eddie Lacy has these certain bonuses every so often that if he hits the bonus at his weigh-in, then he makes some extra money. Well, Eddie Lacy's first weigh-in was on Monday. He had to be under 255 pounds, and if he was, he gets $55,000 in bonus money from the Seattle Seahawks. Lacy's agent tweeted the results and said, first weigh-in at Seattle done, 253. When you think back of what Eddie Lacy was when he came out of college, what did he come in at, like 230 when he came out of Alabama back in, I don't know, 2013 or whatever that was? And they talked to Pete Carroll. Pete Carroll says, Eddie Lacy looks awesome. He looks great. He's huge. He's going to keep playing huge. He did a fantastic job. He's done everything we've asked him to do. I told you this. I'm telling you, it's going to happen. You can't expect Eddie Lacy to go to Seattle, go through like barbecue season, go through the holiday season. If you think he is going to make it all these weigh-ins, I've got some really, really bad news for you. He made the first one, and he just barely, like, this was the highest one. He had to be under 255, and he scraped by like 32 ounces. He beat that. It's not going to go well. I don't know if Eddie Lacy's going to make that final roster. That might not go well for him. The Denver Broncos made a little bit of news over the past few weeks. They began revoking season tickets from their season ticket holders. I know. When you first hear that, you think, that's crazy. Hey, those are my tickets. I paid for them. You can't take my tickets away from me. Here's the problem. They're not really yours. You kind of just lease season tickets, really. The Broncos currently have something like 75,000 people just on the season ticket waiting list. That's not how many own season tickets. That's how many people are waiting to own season tickets. The Broncos have sold out every home game since 1970. Okay, I probably am getting ahead of myself. For like the Raiders and like the Chargers fans listening, season tickets are when you pay for all the home games for an entire season. And a sellout is when every single ticket in the stadium is sold. I just wanted to clarify that. I don't want y'all listening out there and just like, what's he talking about? It sounded like English, but I didn't understand what in the world he was saying. Just so you know, if you're like a Raider fan or, I don't know, a Charger fan, maybe a Los Angeles Rams fan, you might not understand the lingo, you know, all the fancy terms that we use here at The Dose. Just so you know, that's what those terms mean. I know we have listeners from all over. Just want to make sure we're all on the same page. Okay, so if you sold every ticket to each game this past season and you didn't attend a single game, then the Denver Broncos pulled your season tickets and you no longer own them. There was not like a warning. There was not like a, hey, you might want to start showing up again. They pulled your season tickets. You no longer own season tickets. Apparently, the Broncos did this to about 144 ticket holders. That's what they say. Now, there was an appeals process. So some people, of course, went to the appeal. They said they were sick. They said they'd been in the hospital. There were a few people that went on military assignment, whatever. Cool. I can totally appreciate that. I get that. Here's the thing most of these ticket holders have been found to be doing. They've been selling their tickets on third-party sites for well over face value. And they actually, most of the ones that they found, they hadn't attended a single game in some cases 2 to 3 years. Of course, there were like some really, really angry people. I'll be honest, I don't blame the Denver Broncos. I don't blame any team that does this. Because like I said, first off, you don't truly own these seats. You have kind of a lease. You have like a right to these seats based on a lease, but you act like an idiot. Your seats are gone. Hey, here's the thing. If I invite you to my house, say I invite you to my house for like a barbecue and to watch the Bronco game, okay? And you come and you're cool. We have a few drinks. We have some food. We watch the game. We enjoy it. Everything's good. Fine. But let's say that I invite you and you bring a bunch of other people and they aren't even Bronco fans and you eat all my food and you drink all my beer and you make a huge mess and you didn't even bring anything to the barbecue itself, then I might ask you to leave. And you can get mad if you want to, but unfortunately, that's just how things are. You got the invite. You got the seats. Now treat the invite or the seats with a little bit of common sense, with a little bit of wisdom, and don't get mad if we grab you by the scruff of the neck and escort you out. Because you did it to yourself. Plus, to be honest, I don't want fans of other teams coming to my party anyways, so get out and don't let the door hit you as you leave.
Take that for data.
You know, we talked a few weeks ago about how ESPN was in some serious financial trouble. Now, they are, of course, under that Disney umbrella. So it's not like ESPN. I've heard a lot of people, hey, ESPN might be going bankrupt. They're not going bankrupt. They're under Disney. Disney's not going anywhere. Like, there's a number of companies that might lose some money or might go to Disney's not going anywhere. Not as long as they have that Mickey Mouse park and all the movies, they're not going anywhere. But ESPN does seem to be facing some major changes. We've already seen some major layoffs. They're going to have to rethink their business model. And when those major sports broadcasting contracts come due in a few years, I don't see any way that they're going to be able to pony up that kind of money. And we discussed what's probably coming. We could very, very easily see like an Amazon. We could see possibly someone like Hulu sneak in and grab the rights. And maybe if you want to watch Monday Night Football, you're watching it on Amazon. You've got to have Amazon Prime or you can't watch Monday Night Football. Or you could be turning to like Hulu to watch the Thursday night game every single week. Here's just a little more evidence that that might very well be what is going to happen. Because Amazon will be releasing season 2 of their NFL series titled All or Nothing. Not sure if you saw the first season. This show follows a team once the season is already underway. So like in Hard Knocks, it kind of follows a team right up until the point of the season going to start. All or Nothing actually follows the team once the season starts and kind of follows them through the season. After the season's already underway, it gives us that inside look at how they deal with maybe some success. Maybe they're dealing with some failure. Never know which way that's going to go. Last season, in season 1, they followed the Arizona Cardinals. Hey, Arizona had a pretty solid season. Went all the way to the NFC Championship. Remember, they faced the Carolina Panthers. Pretty nice year for the Cardinals. Dealing with success, beating some odds. Now, we think that season 2 will probably be released somewhere around like July 1st. That's about the time frame that it was released last season. So we think that that's when it's going to be. This time, though, All or Nothing will be following around the 4-12 Los Angeles Rams from a year ago. Remember the same team we saw in the HBO series Hard Knocks? Remember the team that was totally boring and incompetent? I guess they'll probably go in depth on the whole Jeff Fisher firing and all of that. I'm going to be honest, I don't really want to watch one more single second of that horrible team. Like, I saw enough of that team during Hard Knocks to last me a lifetime. I don't need to watch Hard Knocks extended going even further. Like, by the time it hit, what is it, 6 episodes that Hard Knocks shows? By the time it hit the 6th episode, I was like, I don't even want to watch the Rams play this year, let alone watch one more, like, behind the closed door about the Los Angeles Rams. That was hideous. That was horrible. But, having said that, if Amazon somehow makes that awful team, like, the least bit interesting, no, they deserve to have the entire NFL ticket. They deserve to be showing some games. They should have like the Monday night game, the Thursday night game, maybe a couple Sunday afternoon games, because that would be quite an accomplishment, to be honest. Making quarterback Jared Goff and like running back Todd Gurley, remember Tavon Austin, and then of course we had William Hayes, who said on Hard Knocks last year that he believed, what was it, mermaids are real, but that dinosaurs are just made up or whatever that was. Remember him? Yeah. If Amazon can make that group seem interesting, no, they deserve the NFL. And I'll even go a little bit further than that. If Amazon can make that team interesting, they deserve like an Oscar and, I don't know, a Tony and maybe a Nobel Peace Prize, because I don't think that is going to happen. That is a boring, horrible team that I really have no interest watching, especially last year during that dreadful 4-12 season. Okay, so what in the world happened to James Harden? I've got a listener email that I've got to make sure and read. And who are we going to be seeing in the NBA Finals? Plus, the Daily Dose Top 5, you always have to make sure that you stick around for that. We will be right back.
Hey guys, it's TJ. I know you're enjoying the wonderful content the Rogue Intel Podcast Network provides you. We really couldn't do this without the support of you, our wonderful listeners. One of the best ways you can say thank you also happens to be one of the easiest ways. Just go to rogueintel.com/Amazon and do your Amazon shopping as you normally would. It won't cost you anything, and you'll be supporting your favorite podcast network. That's rogueintel.com/Amazon.
Movies, anime, comics, video games, and pop culture. These are but mere playthings for the manliest beings in all of podcasting history, the powerful Nerdcast. Hosted by the gurus of geekdom, Corey and Christian, join them each week to discuss all things nerd culture, everything from Star Wars to Dragon Ball Z, and everything in between. Find the powerful Nerdcast on the Rogue Intel Podcast Network at rogueintel.com.
Table Reads, now part of the Rogue Intel Podcast Network.
Hey everybody, this is Trevor and I'm here with Sean.
Hi.
And we're from Table Reads. Do you know what Table Reads is?
You no.
Exactly.
I don't know what it is.
Even Sean doesn't know what it is and he created it. Well, Sean, if you had to guess, which clearly you do, what do you think Table Reads is?
I would think it's a show about a fat guy and a skinny guy reading some bad scripts that never got to be made into movies.
Experience the worst Hollywood has to offer with readings of the scripts you never wanted.
You know, the thing I love about you, Sean, ever since we were kids, is you're always good at guessing. You nailed it.
Yay!
Yay!
Table Reads. Every Tuesday, right here on the Rogue Intel Podcast Network, or visit tablereadspodcast.com.
You know, I received an email that I've got to read. I've got to make sure that you all hear this. Got an email from one of our favorite listeners, Mike, out in SoCal. Mike will email the show every once in a while. I always look forward to hearing from him. Here is the email that I got. Clint, looking at the new LeVar Ball shoes, they look very similar to my post office issued shoes. Does this mean, as a United States postal worker, that I'm technically a big baller? Thanks, Mike. That is an excellent question. Of course, just a couple weeks ago, we remember LeVar Ball released his new line of big baller merchandise. And when you saw all that merchandise come out, and we saw the prices, he's charging $495 for those cheap-looking Kobe knockoffs. I think he was charging like $220 for the flip-flops. So, does wearing the shoes actually make you a big baller? Because a lot of people think it does. There's going to be people that buy this just for that reason. I mean, remember, we have also seen, remember Steph Curry released his Under Armour Chef Curry shoes? That apparently a number of young people went into the nursing profession because they kind of looked like nurse shoes. So does wearing shoes, you know, that look like the LeVar Ball shoes, does that make you a big baller? See, this is a very similar situation. Here's the thing, Mike. As a postal worker, I looked at the shoes. You have very similar shoes to what the big ballers are wearing. Here is the only difference. Unlike Lonzo Ball in his final game with UCLA against Kentucky, when he scored just 10 points, while he allowed De'Aaron Fox to go for 33 points, see, Mike, here's the difference. You actually deliver in the clutch. You know, the neither rain nor sleet nor snow. That right there, Mike, makes you, a United States postal worker, a big baller. Wear those big baller postal shoes with pride, my friend.
You don't work in the rain. You're a mailman. Neither rain nor sleet. It's the first one!
I was never that big on creeds.
Thank you for that email. If you'd like to reach out to us, we would love to hear from you. Hit us at dailydosports@gmail.com. Hey, you know, it's interesting when we look at the NBA. Because the top two MVP candidates are already gone. And let's be honest, if they had played someone else besides each other, they might have been gone even earlier. But Russell Westbrook and James Harden, they were the two leading candidates for NBA MVP. And here is the thing that we always need to remember. When you're talking about the NBA MVP, always keep in the back of your mind, you don't want that award.
What?
Like, you might think you do. You don't. Here is a look back at a few NBA regular season MVPs. Remember last year, 2016, it was Steph Curry. And then the Cleveland Cavaliers won it all. In 2014, it was Kevin Durant. And then the San Antonio Spurs won it all. Derrick Rose won it in 2011. But it was the Mavericks that went on to beat the Miami Heat in the finals. LeBron James, even, he won it in 2009 and in 2010. But it was the Los Angeles Lakers that actually won those titles. See, I am of the belief, maybe this is just me, I am of the belief that every single season that Michael Jordan played for the Chicago Bulls, he probably deserved to get the MVP. But you also remember Karl Malone with the Utah Jazz winning one. We remember Charles Barkley winning one. remember one thing on these awards, and we've talked about it on the Dose before. I don't care if it's the Heisman. I don't care if it's the MVP, whatever. They are voted on by a lot of writers many times. See, the writers don't care. The writers don't care about getting it right. You know what the writers want? And I say this as a writer myself now. They want something different to write about. I don't want to keep writing the same story every single week. Do you have any idea how much repetition is in this job already as it is? Like every article you write, especially if you're covering a specific team or if you're covering a specific sport, there is already some repetition that goes along with writing. If I'm writing about, say, the Cleveland Cavaliers, I'm always going to preface everything. I've got to say things like, we know that as LeBron James goes, the Cavs go, and if LeBron James can get a little bit of help, and if he can get some post presence, you say the same things again and again and again and again. You just do. That's the nature of the business in writing. And so what the writers do is they basically just vote for someone new. Look, I can make a pretty strong case that LeBron James is the MVP right now. And I can pretty much make that case almost every single year for the past few years. But he's already won the award. And so as a writer, we don't want to write that story again. We've already wrote that story a few times. So we vote for some new blood. But we all know who the real MVP is, right? And it isn't Kevin Durant's mom. Now, having said that, if I'm LeBron, or I'm Steph Curry, or I'm Kevin Durant, or I'm Kawhi Leonard, whoever it is, I don't want that award. I want a ring. Because winning the NBA MVP award means I'm probably not winning anything else. If I just look at history, that's how that's gone. So you can keep the NBA MVP. You give me that NBA MVP award, I'd give it back. That's like winning the Heisman. All's winning the Heisman means is I'm probably about to suck in the NFL. No thanks. Save that for the Gina Torettas and the Jason Whites of the world. I want to go get paid. You can keep that award. Same thing with the NBA MVP. There's a ton of talk about it. It's discussed on all the major sports networks. If I'm the actual player, yeah, I don't want that award. Go give that award to somebody else. Go give that award to somebody who does want it, because I don't want it. I want to go win a ring. Okay, so what is it that happened to Houston Rockets guard James Harden in Game 6 against San Antonio Spurs? Before we get to the NBA Conference Finals preview, we've got to discuss this just really quick. Because if you watched Game 6 of the Western Conference Semifinals between the Houston Rockets and the San Antonio Spurs, you've got to be wondering what in the world happened to James Harden. I mean, he is a contender for that MVP award. With Kawhi Leonard going out with an ankle injury, the Rockets had a chance to win Game 6 at home and then force a Game 7 in San Antonio. Just go out, put together a good, strong game. Go do what you do. Houston is going to a Game 7, and it's going to be a battle, and anything can happen in one game. Instead, James Harden comes out, plays completely uninspired basketball. James Harden went 2 for 11. He had 6 turnovers, and he fouled out early. Here's the thing. You can live with execution losses. You really can. And I know those still kind of bother you sometimes, but you can live with the execution loss. We just failed to execute. We played hard. We just made mistakes. The ball didn't go in for us. The ball bounced the wrong way, whatever it was. That wasn't the case here in Game 6. This, honestly, this looked like James Harden had something on his mind, and there were a few different things that stood out to me as I watched it. I've told you before, as a former basketball coach, I am always, always looking for body language. I'm always trying to read what a player might be thinking, what a player might be feeling, but not necessarily saying. They might not be vocalizing it, but I'm always looking for what they're really feeling. And sometimes you can spot things in body language when you look for that. I'm going to go back to Game 3 in this series. In Game 3, Harden hits the floor pretty hard. I think he drove inside for a layup. They take him down. He hits the floor pretty hard. His teammates go over to help him up. And I don't remember. I think it was Nene, maybe Clint Capella. I don't know. But they go over to help him up. James Harden refused their help. Now, see, I notice weird things like that. It's a little strange to me. It's a little bit weird. If I hit the floor, my teammates come over to help me. The opposing team could help me. I would accept their help, let alone my own teammates. My own teammates pick me up. Yeah, get up. James Harden just sat there. Like, he refused their help. He finally just got up on his own. little bit weird to me. A little bit strange. Kind of made a mental note. That's kind of weird. And then I start watching Game 6. Like, I'm primed. I'm ready. I'm kind of excited to watch Game 6. This could be really good. This might be really interesting. See what's going to happen. Going to force a Game 7. But you know what Game 6 made me think of? And I know a lot of people said that it kind of made them think of like Russell Westbrook. It just looked like James Harden, he just ran out of gas. He just didn't have anything left in the tank. He had been carrying that team for so long that he just ran out of gas. Here's what it made me think of. Do you remember back in 2006? You might not. If not, I'll refresh your memory. The Los Angeles Lakers were in the first round playoff series against the Phoenix Suns. And in Game 6, which the Lakers won, Kobe Bryant had gone for 50 points. So in the post-game press conference, Phil Jackson had stated that Kobe probably needs to do a better job of getting his teammates involved. And in Game 7, Kobe Bryant did just that. Because Kobe Bryant basically just refused to shoot. He went on like this personal agenda weirdness. He shot the ball only 16 times. Hey, let's be real honest. Kobe Bryant could get 16 shots up in like a half a quarter when he really wanted to. He kept passing up open shots. He would look, he would be open, and he would just pass it up. It reached a point where Phoenix kind of started to drop off because they could see it. I don't know what he's doing, but he won't shoot. He's just refusing to shoot, and it was just to prove a point. Kobe was mad at Phil Jackson. And I think he was probably mad at his teammates for not being better. And the Suns blew the Lakers out by 30. So when I look at this situation with James Harden, I don't know what the beef that he has is exactly. I can't tell you why he was so mad or what it is that's bothering him so much. But I can tell you why he was so bad in Game 6. Like I said, I'm not sure why. But he hates his entire team's guts. And he might hate Mike D'Antoni's guts too. Because James Harden went out there in Game 6 like a man that wanted to prove a point. And he had no interest whatsoever in winning that game. I don't know what his reason is. I just know what I saw in Game 3 told me he's got some kind of beef with his teammates. And what I saw in Game 6 just proved it. Like I said, I have no idea why he hates them so bad. Oh, but he hates them so bad. James Harden can't stand his own Houston Rockets. Okay, let's take a look at the NBA Conference Finals. We finally have the San Antonio Spurs versus the Golden State Warriors in the West. Got the Boston Celtics versus the Cleveland Cavaliers in the East. We've got 1-2 on both sides. Let's start over in the West. We saw Game 1. The Spurs were up 25, and then Kawhi Leonard steps on someone's foot on the Spurs bench, and don't forget that point, because I know we're all looking at Zaza and seeing how he stepped on his foot, but don't forget that Kawhi stepped on someone's foot on his own bench, someone from his own roster, before and tweak the ankle to begin with. Then he comes down on Zaza Pachulia's foot and hurts it even worse. Kawhi Leonard has to leave the game. And of course, we saw the Golden State Warriors come back, win Game 1. Now, Greg Popovich says Zaza is a dirty player. And honestly, he might be. He might be. I don't know how dirty of a play this was. Is it an uncoordinated play? Yes. Is it a clumsy play? Definitely. Was it an intentional play? I'm not sure about that. I don't think so. Let's understand this. When I watch Zaza's reaction, I don't even know if he knows that Leonard came down on his foot. He's mad about the foul being called on him. I don't even know if he knew. If you watch his reaction, he closes out. Yes, he closes out clumsily. He closes out with his feet in a bad place. It's a very, very clumsy move. Is it intentional? I don't think so. I think he's just kind of a clumsy guy. He's a big, lumbering guy. He's mad about the foul call. Now, Greg Popovich, he's defending his player. He's defending a player like he should. But let's not forget and slow down Greg Popovich on going out and saying who's dirty and who's not. Because I remember when you coached Bruce Bowen, and we remember some of the things that Bruce Bowen did. So slow down on all the manslaughter accusations. Greg Popovich is a great coach. Ease up. When you had a player that did some questionable things like Bruce Bowen, you were just fine with all that. Before we go any further, and I do want to give you a prediction and everything, I have to say one thing. It's kind of been on my mind. I got to say one thing about this whole Kawhi Leonard thing. Kawhi Leonard comes down on Zaza's foot, turns the ankle, sits there for a minute, goes to the bench, limps off quietly to the locker room. He's questionable going forward. I just want to throw this out there. Can you imagine if that had been LeBron James that came down on Zaza's foot? He would have been ripping the plugs right out of his own forehead while like rolling around in a puddle of his own tears and urine and feces in the middle of the floor. Hell hath no fury like a woman scorned, or like if LeBron James actually did get hurt. Just throwing that out there. Because Kawhi was very, very quiet about it. Limped off, went to the locker room, no big deal. I can't even fathom, I can't even get my head around if that had happened to LeBron James. A wheelchair would not have been enough, is all I'm saying. Okay, now I'll give him this. And I do think Greg Popovich got a little bit high and mighty. You know, Greg Popovich never stops coaching them. And that's all it is when he's complaining about this call. That's all it is. He never stops coaching. Hey, maybe next time we get that closeout call, and maybe that helps us win a game. Because he's always coaching. We saw in the last series against Houston, Danny Green commits a foul in game 3. This is game 3 of the playoffs. This isn't December. This is the postseason. But the San Antonio Spurs pride themselves on not fouling. That is unacceptable to Greg Popovich. They slide their feet. They show their hands. They do not foul. You know the Spurs only commit about 18 fouls per game? So Greg Popovich, in game 3 against Houston, Danny Green commits this foul. Pop benches him. Pop sits him down. That is one of his top defenders, one of his top perimeter defenders especially. And against a team like Houston, you need those perimeter defenders. Are you really teaching lessons now? But see, Greg Popovich doesn't care. Then in game 5, we all saw this. Spurs had the ball, a few seconds remaining, the game's tied. They run a double high screen for Patty Mills. And then Popovich wanted Pau Gasol to come out and screen for Mills again. Instead, Gasol goes to the paint. He's going to rebound. He's getting ready for the shot. And Mills couldn't get the shot off in time. He couldn't get clear. Popovich absolutely loses his mind on Pau Gasol. Just crushed him in front of everyone. There were a number of people questioning it. Hey, Pau Gasol is a 17-year veteran. You don't hammer him like that in public. Why would you do that? Gasol clearly knows how to set a screen. You know why Greg Popovich does all this? Because the next time, he might get the call. And the next time, I'll promise you, Pau Gasol won't miss setting that screen. And next time, just might win a game for the Spurs. Now, in game 1, we saw how San Antonio could have success early. Smother Golden State at the 3-point line, force them to put it on the floor, and at the other end, just keep feeding LaMarcus Aldridge, keep feeding Pau Gasol. They might not hit every shot, but tell them to attack when they get it. And let's be honest, it was working. They were going against those lesser post players for the Golden State Warriors, and they were having a lot of success. And to be fair, the Warriors started out a little flat. They had been off for a few days. If Kawhi Leonard doesn't have his typical explosion after that ankle injury, I just don't see how the Spurs can hang with Golden State, though. Because Kawhi Leonard is such an excellent player. He's such a good perimeter defender. He's such a good offensive player. He can get to the basket. He can score in small windows. But on a bad ankle, I just don't know if Kawhi can be the same kind of player that could really, really drastically change what he does. And Golden State just has so many weapons. You know, the real problem, when you lose a player like Kawhi Leonard, and don't forget, San Antonio, of course, already lost Tony Parker in the last series. Now you have other players that have to step up. And some of the young guys on San Antonio's roster can step up at times. But here's the thing. They're not seasoned enough to do it consistently at a very, very high level in the postseason. Now, one thing to remember, in game 1, Andre Iguodala not playing that much. So while the Spurs are without some of their players, Iguodala barely played. He's coming back from a knee injury. He's had a real sore knee injury. When he comes back, and they did do an MRI, didn't show any structural damage, Iguodala is going to make the Warriors even better. I hate to do this. I hate to go against a Greg Popovich coach team and the San Antonio Spurs. I'm taking Golden State in, I'll give them 5 games. Maybe it goes, nah, I'm going 5. I'm taking Warriors in 5 over in the West. Over in the East, of course, the Boston Celtics outlasted the Washington Wizards in game 7. And bizarrely, kind of weird, they got a huge lift from big white stiff Kelly Olynyk. Olynyk had 26 points in the deciding game, and the Boston Celtics bench is really what came through for them in the final game. The Boston Celtics bench outscored the Washington bench 48-5. And you know, that wasn't the only place that Boston beat the Wizards. For all of the talk about Boston hitting 11 from 26 from three-point range, and I totally get that, the Celtics pounded Washington inside. They scored 58 points in the paint to just 40 for Washington. I mean, they're celebrating. Boston Garden was rocking. The racial slurs were flying. It was a grand old night in the city of Boston. And I really hope they enjoyed it, because it's all about to end. The Cavaliers are well rested. And you know, with Boston being the top seed in the East, I don't know if that really helps them, because the pressure is going to be all on Boston to hold court in those first two home games. You're supposed to win those home games, right? I don't know if they win those first two games. And if they don't, it's going to be really, really tough. The Cavaliers won the series during the regular season 3-1. I told you before, I don't like this matchup for Boston. The Celtics are going to have to run a few different people at LeBron. They'll try Jay Crowder. They'll go to Gerald Green. They'll even go with undersized Marcus Smart. The problem, LeBron has averaged almost 30 points per game this year. So whoever they're rolling out, it's not working. Now, the point guards might actually be a wash, because Isaiah Thomas, Kyrie Irving, neither one of them can guard anybody, and they can both put up big points, but that's kind of a trade. I think the difference in this series will be the ability of Cleveland to continue shooting at a really high percentage. Boston's a really, really good defensive team. All year they were. For some reason, they just can't do it against Cleveland. Cleveland averaged 116 points per game against them this season. And the Cavs, I mean, we talked about it last week, they have been shooting the lights out in the postseason. If that continues, if it continues to be that way, I don't see this series as even being close. I would probably take, do I give Boston a game? I can't see it. I can't even see Boston winning. I'm taking the Cavs in a sweep. I'm going to go Cleveland in four. Sorry. I wish it was something different. I wish I could come up with a reason to take the underdogs in both of these series. I'm going Warriors in five, and I'm going Cavs in four. Just a quick reminder, make sure that you head over to lootcrate.com/dailydose. Do any of the shopping that you might need to do. Of course, Loot Crate delivers the best in merchandising and collectibles, featuring your favorite TV shows, movies, and video games. And you can go get a crate. You can go order a subscription of crates, or you can just get individual items, and they have a ton of different items over there. This month's crate is called Guardians, and it does feature all kinds of items from Guardians of the Galaxy 2, Star Wars, Destiny, and even the Goonies. You know, they've got shirts, they've got hoodies, they've got comic books, figurines, hats, they've got stuff for your pets over at Loot Crate. They just have a ton of things over there, some really cool merchandising that you're going to want to check out. And you can always go back and you can order past crates. You can always go back. You can find items from a crate that you might have seen. Maybe you didn't want the full crate, but you're like, oh, but I like that one shirt, or I like that one hoodie. You can go back and get those too. The best part about ordering from Loot Crate, when you place your order at checkout, put Daily Dose in the coupon box, DALYDOSE. You will get 10% off your full order. Of course, we don't keep any of that money here at the Daily Dose from Loot Crate. We just forward anything we get over to the Billy Betts Lacrosse Fund, and we help some kids get involved in sports. So go over there, place your order. You know you're going to get good quality merchandise, and you're going to know in the back of your mind that you're helping some kids get involved in an athletic program. Everybody wins. Now, as we do every single week, we have got to get over to our Daily Dose Top 5. Hey, we all know what's coming in the NBA, right? The NBA Finals are going to be the Golden State Warriors versus the Cleveland Cavaliers, aren't they? I mean, they're the two heavy favorites. They've been the favorite since last spring. That's how long. They're the most talented teams. They're the past two defending champions, and they have met for the past two NBA Finals. Looks like it's going to be a third time. It's never happened before. We've never seen the same two teams meet three times in a row. But it looks like it's going to happen this time, doesn't it? But you know, there have been teams in the past that we thought were just an absolute lock to go to the NBA Finals. They went all the way through, they got to the conference final, and then they got upset. You know, matchups are everything in basketball. And if a matchup doesn't go the way that we think it will, or if we underestimate a certain aspect of the matchup, things could go sideways. So today, on the Daily Dose, we count down the Daily Dose top five NBA Conference Finals upsets. Could we see it happen again? I don't think it's going to happen. It's going to be the Warriors and the Cavs, right? Right? Maybe. Number five on our list. We go back to 2009. You know, the Cleveland Cavaliers at that time had LeBron James, and they were the top seed in the NBA East. They had a 66-16 record. Of course, the Orlando Magic, they were 59-23. They were the four seed, and remember, they had Dwight Howard. They had Rashard Lewis. They had Hedo Turkoglu. Yes, Hedo Turkoglu. But the Magic out-muscled the Cavaliers. They out-rebounded them, and they pounded the ball inside. Hey, LeBron put up huge numbers in this series. LeBron James averaged almost 39 points per game. But Dwight Howard scored 22 points a game. He also had 13 rebounds a game, and the Magic held Cleveland to just 32% from outside the three-point arc. And in the deciding game, it was Dwight Howard who stepped up. It was Dwight Howard who had 40 points and 14 rebounds, and the Orlando Magic knocked off the Cleveland Cavaliers and went to the NBA Finals, not the Cavs. Everybody thought it would be the Cavaliers. Nope. Orlando got by them. They went instead. That's number five on our list. Number four, we got to go all the way back to 1971. You know, the 52-30 New York Knicks were actually just coming off of winning the NBA championship the previous season back in 1970. In 71, they had rolled by the Atlanta Hawks in five games, and all they had to do, just beat the Washington Bullets. The Washington Bullets were just a little above 500, and if they did that, the Knicks would be headed back to the NBA Finals. But this was a tight series, and it went all the way to a seventh game. And you know, three of the games in the series decided by less than 5 points. That's one thing you got to do. If you're going to pull the upset, you got to find a way to win those close games. Earl Monroe, Jack Marin, and Fred Carter combined for 62 points a game for the Bullets. Wes Unseld was a monster inside, and Washington found a way to get a tough 2-point win in Game 7. Of course, the Knicks would go on to get another ring just 2 years later, but they didn't get it in 1971 when the Bullets knocked them off. Number three on our list, if you've ever wondered why Greg Popovich, coach of the San Antonio Spurs, coaches the regular season the way he does, and a lot of it has to do with our number three entry on our list. Because in 2001, the San Antonio Spurs were dominating in the regular season. They had a 58-24 record. The Los Angeles Lakers, on the other hand, they weren't pushing to be in first place. They were just kind of content to cruise along. They didn't particularly care about their record. Now, back then, unlike now, Phil Jackson still had some brain cells.
Well, you know, that's just like your opinion, man.
He knew the regular season didn't really matter all that much. And when they met in the NBA West Conference Finals, the Lakers didn't just beat San Antonio. They swept San Antonio behind Kobe Bryant's 33 points a game and Shaquille O'Neal's 27 points and 13 rebounds per game. The Lakers beat the Spurs by an average of 20 points per game in that sweep. And since then, we've all seen Greg Popovich learned a really, really important lesson. But Lakers over the Spurs comes in at number three. Number two on our list. Go back to 1986, back to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers were 62-20. They were the top seed in the West. They crushed the Spurs, they beat the Mavericks, and now they were about to do the same thing to the young Houston Rockets. This is the Showtime Lakers. This was Magic. This was Kareem. This was Worthy. This was Byron Scott. This was Michael Cooper. You know what they're going to do to those young Houston Rockets with their silly twin towers? We would be witnessing another Lakers versus Celtics NBA Finals, except that's not exactly how that went down. Because that young Twin Towers group made Kareem Abdul-Jabbar look kind of old. Hakeem Olajuwon and Ralph Sampson combined for nearly 60 points a game. And the Rockets were also getting contributions from Lewis Lloyd and Robert Reed. Yes, the Rockets got handled by the Celtics in the finals. And yes, the Lakers would go on to win the next two titles after this. But in 1986, they got beaten just five games by the Houston Rockets. And it helped Los Angeles because they looked and said, what do we've got to do? We've got to go get some younger guys. We've got to go get some size. We're going to have to learn how to deal with these Twin Towers. Because Olajuwon and Sampson made them look bad back in 86. They made some adjustments. They fixed some things. And they went out and got it better in 87 and 88. That comes in at number two. Number one on our list of top five NBA conference finals upsets. Got to go back a ways for this one. Got to go clear back to 1976. The Golden State Warriors were 59-23. You might remember a couple of the names on that team. Rick Barry, Phil Smith, Jamal Wilkes. They were scoring 110 points a game. And they beat Bob Lanier and the Detroit Pistons in the first round of the NBA playoffs. Beat them in six. Now, instead of facing the number two seed, Seattle Supersonics, somehow the 42-40 Phoenix Suns got by them. The Suns didn't even look like they belonged in the NBA Conference Finals. And in Game 1, that's certainly how it looked. The Suns got blown out by 25. The Warriors were going to blow past the Suns. This wouldn't even be close. This wouldn't even be a competitive series. But remember, winning at home in a 7-game series, that's just what you're supposed to do. Remember, you don't get any bonus points for winning a home game. That's what you should do. And in Game 2, the Suns got 31 points from Paul Westphal. They stole the win in Oakland. Golden State got home court advantage back when they won Game 3. The Suns got Game 4. But when the Warriors got Game 5, looked like it might be over. Because now you've got two games to win one. Somehow, the Suns won Game 6 and forced a Game 7. But it's on the road. It's at Golden State. The Warriors, yes, it kind of got tight and they took them clear to a 7th game. But the Warriors are going to survive this, wouldn't they? No, because in Game 7, the Phoenix Suns held the Golden State Warriors to just 86 points and advanced to the NBA Finals. Hey, we know this year who the favorites are. We know it should be Warriors, it should be Cavaliers. And we kind of feel like we just need to fast forward to those finals, get the show on the road, let's move past everybody. Yes, we know the other teams that are out there, but we know who it's going to be. We know this is going to end up being Spurs and Cavs. But don't forget, there have been heavy favorites go into the NBA Conference Finals before, and they ended up going home. Hey, next week on the show, of course, we will be discussing the NBA, probably some NHL. The NFL is always in the headlines. Might have to get around to some baseball, maybe some auto racing, I don't know. And you always have to be sure that you stick around for the Daily Dose Top 5. Hey, please go to wherever it is that you download the show. Just click that little subscribe or follow button. And if you follow us over on blogtalkradio.com, you will get the episodes a little bit quicker than anyone else. Feel free to click share, send the show to someone that you feel might like it. We would appreciate that so much. You can always contact us with what's on your mind by emailing us at dailydosesports@gmail.com, or you can find us over on Facebook or Twitter, and be sure to do any shopping that you might need to do over at lootcrate.com/dailydose. If you enter Daily Dose into that coupon box, you're going to get 10% off your order. Hey, I heard from a number of listeners last week. Had a number of people reach out, whether it was on Twitter, whether it was on Facebook, whether it was on email, whatever it was. I heard from a number of listeners last week. I don't know why. They just reached out and said, hey, really enjoyed the show. Really enjoyed the things that you're doing on the Daily Dose. Thank you all so much. You have no idea how great it is to hear from you. You make the world a better place. I have to say thank you for that. Thank you for listening each and every week. I truly, truly appreciate it. I have to say thank you to JSP. Could not do any of this without you. I will see you all next week.